Hello, this is Susan Smith-Nash, and you're listening to Thoughts on E-Learning. I'm going to talk a little bit today about something we haven't really been addressing in e-learning lately, and that has to do with ethos and also creating a certain image or impact with your objects, with your learning objects. And I thought, well, this is a good time to anchor this talk with something specific and something situated in the phenomenological world, and that would be something to do with power and the upcoming political campaigns. So I'm going to talk about how to create an aura of power around a person simply by means of their speech, their stories. Let's embed power in our messages. It's not as hard as it might seem. But why do it? Who cares about subtly communicating that you're all about power? Isn't it better to transmit a message of coolness, truth, celebrity, or some other ethos designed to spur sales? We're approaching a campaign year, though, and I thought it would be fun to construct my own charismatic candidate, whom I'll take care not to name after recently vilified characters. So, how do you groom a candidate for office? Okay, I have to admit, I'm fascinated by spin-generating tactics of the late Lee Atwater, or, well, the still-living Karl Rove. Rove, although I think that Rove is not as interesting, is basically still working as we speak, as you listen, to generate spin. Atwater was a true genius. I won't go into it now, but I encourage you to research him on the internet. So, Lee Atwater, and some of the keywords may be Dukakis, or Bush, George H.W. Bush. So that will keep you busy as you contemplate things that I'm going to talk about now. So let's turn back to power. Now, how do we interject power into the discourse? Let's start with the trace. That's something we're going to borrow from Jacques Derrida, king of the deconstructivists, whose book, Writing Indifference, gave people a sense of how it might be possible to reinvent meaning. He suggests that each word has a built-in self-destruct mechanism. Touched in the wrong manner, or in the right manner, the word and all the supposed meanings blow up. For an instant, at the instant you read something, the thing that has been written is amorphous. Meaning has gone somewhere else, and it's chaotic. It's up to you to rebuild the meaning. So, how do you do that? You follow the clues. Derrida says there's a trace of something else in every word or its meaning configuration. So our presidential candidate stands in the dais and says something about, ask not what your country, and already we're paying attention to who said it first, not so much to the person who's saying the words now. Derrida suggests that this speaker just blew up his own discourse. The ruptured signifier sets off a chain reaction, meanings that swirl around a center and an echo of previous words and speeches. So, the people who look to the presidential candidate now see that there is something that is standing outside the frame, not really referred to in his speech, but alluded to, whether or not he likes it. The referent has been dislocated. This is to say that whatever it was supposed to mean is only approachable indirectly. You have to move into it obliquely. So the way to speak of power is to build in the language that has been employed elsewhere, which sets up an amazing echo effect, which, with any luck, will resonate with our presidential candidate. And here's how I would assemble a speech to embed the maximum amount of power and to have a big 300-pound gorilla of power hover right outside the frame of reference. With any luck at all, our candidate will be totally Teflon. People will be afraid to touch him. Further, whatever mud is flung won't stick. It will be deflected by the power hovering just outside. The dislocated referent stands just in front of him and functions as Teflon. Of course, the end result is that our poor candidate will start to feel isolated. After all, no one will be speaking really to him. It will just hit all of his communication. It will just be an oblique exchange between reference and the trace. So let's assemble a speech for our guy, or female. Let's include the following. Snippets of famous speeches, allusions to literary heroes, references to famous battles, historical or literary. If we want to take it further, we can set up an entire economy of meaning. We'll put him in contexts that communicate power with all the nonverbal, non-textual signifiers set on high. We'll arrange lighting, color, backdrops, props to resonate power. Is it possible to be too obvious? Probably, but somehow the more obvious and artless, the better. People will see what you're doing and grasp it within a nanosecond. If you're transparent in your tactics, you'll seem somehow honest and not deceptive. Moving on from Derrida, I'd employ some ideas from Roland Barthes in his book, Image, Music, Text. Barthes pointed out that language creates the ability for us to talk about the past, present, and the future at the same time. We almost feel as though we can experience the past or the future, even though that is possible. But we can imagine it and conceptualize the past and the future thanks to our language. You're probably saying, well, great, and how is that going to help our political candidate? By creating the maximum amount of resonance with past, present, and future, we will enter a temporary state of pleasure, which Barthes calls jouissance, a fleeting joy, a platonic moment of unity. These are all possible if our candidate talks about heroes or a mythical character who has attributes that slip back and forth between past, future, and present. Now, if we're going to collectively share a consciousness of power, we have to do it by means of language. Again, we're indebted to a thinker from the past. In this case, we are employing the ideas of Mikhail Bakhtin, as articulated in Discourse in the Novel. Bakhtin suggests that we can't even conceive of ourselves without language. Language is necessary to have a consciousness of self, of others. Like it or not, we have to choose a language. We're not talking about a language such as English or Russian. In this case, we're talking about language in its broadest sense, the idea that language is how we know ourselves and how we create a code or economy that can be shared with others. Language can be of signs and symbols. It can be nonverbal. If our candidate is going to be successful, we need to make sure he or she communicates in the language of power. Once he or she masters that language, he or she will have consciousness of power. That's a little scary if you think about it, because it means that every single thing that the person encounters will be run through a filter of knowledge of language, in this case, power. It is the a priori, the prior knowledge structure that allows meaning to be made. In this case, the meaning will be all about power. In fact, it is hard to argue that there is anything in that conversation but power, because, after all, we're using a language that is a language of power. So, we've succeeded. Now, all we have to do is to name our candidate. Okay, so I hope that you've enjoyed this. My microphone is creaking. Sorry about that. It's like, I'm not going to name the name because I'll get in trouble if I say that this microphone creaks and is kind of virtually useless for recording, but I'm doing it anyway. So thank you for listening, and this is Susan Smith Nash, and you've been listening to Thoughts on E-Learning, and specifically, Thoughts on Power.